Welcome back to a conversation we actually started yesterday with the Boston Globe's Shira Springer about athletes to watch in the Olympic Games. Athletes like sprinter Tyson Gay and weightlifter Holly Mangold. Well, there's another Olympian, one you may not have heard of, who caught our attention. Natalie Dell is from Everett, Pennsylvania. She'll be in the bow seat of the women's quadruple sculls. The bow seat is in the back of the boat that holds four rowers. But as Natalie likes to point out, she's first to come across the finish line since the boat travels backwards. The rowing team trains in Princeton, New Jersey, and that's where we reached Natalie just before the team left for London. Natalie told us that she joined the U.S. Women's National Rowing Team in August of 2010, but she didn't get there the usual way. She didn't grow up in a world of yacht clubs and regattas.
I don't have much of a rowing pedigree, as they like to say. I grew up in central Pennsylvania, and I hail from a working-class, middle-class background. I grew up on a farm. I ran in high school. I was a track athlete and had Division I offers to run. It just didn't suit me, and I just knew I didn't really want to do it. And I went to Penn State, and I arrived on campus as a non-athlete, and I really missed competing. And one of my friends said, you know, I know somebody on the crew team, and they're all kind of crazy, and they work out all the time, and here's a flyer for the informational meeting. I went to that meeting, and I knew right away, this is it.
And to be clear, rowing at Penn State was not a university-funded sport. It was more like the chess club or ultimate frisbee.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
So now rowing is in your blood. And when you left Penn State, you came here to Boston to row on the Charles River and pursue a degree in public health at Boston University at the same time, which led you to a job working with veterans seeking help for PTSD. Tell me about your job, what you do at the VA.
Currently, I am working on two research studies. One study is the help-seeking behaviors with veterans who have depression. Like, what does it take for a veteran with depression to seek help for it? And also, whether or not yoga is an effective way of helping veterans who have PTSD.
What do veterans say when they hear you're an Olympic rower?
Well, I feel like when I'm in a room with a veteran, you know, when they're talking about the things that they have done for their country out on the front, I'm not going to butt in and say, oh yeah, by the way, I picked up two oars and I, you know, rowed a boat in London. You know, I just, I'm in all of them. So I don't, my rowing doesn't really come up much.
So while you're working full time at the VA, you're also training. And from what I read, it's a lot of hours in the hopes of making the U.S. national team. Describe a typical day for us.
A typical day for me when I was training in Boston was I would wake up at about 4:30, and I would train for about 90 minutes on the water in a single-person boat. And then I would get ready for work, and I would drive up to Bedford, Massachusetts, where I worked at the VA. And I put in a couple hours of work, and when my lunch break rolled around, I run for about an hour, and I come back, I work some more, and then go back down to Cambridge, train again.
All the while that you're working and training, you say it was tough. You didn't have access to national team coaches and training centers that groom rowers out of college. You were an outsider looking in at the others on the national team, just wishing you were there. But on the other hand, you say you owe your rowing success to your work. And not going straight to the national team out of college was a blessing in disguise. Tell us how.
I got very lucky in that when I made the national team and had to move down to Princeton, the department was so thrilled. They said, we will keep you on. You can work remotely. And I train 6 hours a day. And sometimes it can be difficult to find balance with that kind of lifestyle. And it is like a vacation every day to be able to put rowing away for 2 to 3 hours, sit down at my computer, and do health research. It refreshes my mind, and I come back to practice, and I'm motivated.
We talked about the unusual path you took to get into rowing and the training you did while working, and we understand that you got invited to the national team in a bit of an unorthodox way. Tell us about that.
The majority of people who make the national team, they are recruited straight out of college, and they are very strong, or they have these really big builds that you know, the coaches see so much potential in their tall frame. And it's from this pool of athletes that they have gathered that they choose the national team each year. So there's about 30 to 40 women who train together, and every year they pick 16 out of that group. I didn't take that path because I wasn't fast enough when I came out of college. I'm also short.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'9".
That doesn't sound short to me.
Well, we can go on the record as saying that I'm 5'8 and 3/4", but I round up. In the rowing community, I always say I'm 5'11". but I didn't have an imposing stature. I also, because I went to a club team in college, I had to work on the outside and just kind of keep pestering the coaches, you know, say, hey, you know, I just did this on the machine and I just won this race and, you know, any chance there's a spot for me? And, you know, finally I started performing well enough where I was not only competitive with women who were already at the training center, but I was beating some of them.
I also understand, though, you had a little lift, we could say, from your shoes.
No. Oh, my. Yes, I was very afraid that once I worked so hard to get this invitation to train with the national team, that I was going to show up and they would see that I was short and they would just either send me home or make it really difficult for me so that I would want to go home. I went to Old Navy and I bought these wedge flip-flops that girls like to wear, and I cut off the heel and I slipped it into my shoe, and so I was like 2 inches taller than what I naturally would have been. And if you look down at my shoes, I looked ridiculous because I was like falling out of them, but that's how I walked around for the first 3 months that I was on the team. And then I eventually stopped doing that because there are women on the team who are my stature, and they prove themselves as some of the best athletes on the team, and they don't wear lifts in their shoes. They just work really, really hard.
Your first race in London is on July 28th, and U.S. women rowers will be up against some stiff competition from number one ranked Ukraine, also Germany, and of course Great Britain. Obviously, you're optimistic, but realistically, what do you think the chances are of the U.S. picking up a medal in the quad sculls?
Every year, there's always a front runner. And when you get to the Olympics, everything changes. They like to say, it's the Olympics, anything can happen. So people who are viewed as a front runner or potential medalists because they've medaled at years past, like we have or like Ukraine has, you can get to the Olympics and things just change because it's a different dynamic, a different race. So we have the strength in our boat to be on that podium, and I really do believe it. And we're ready for a fight because that is what we're going to get.
Olympian Natalie Dell. Dell and her teammates will be competing in the women's quadruple sculls at the 2012 Summer Games in London. And I should definitely say good luck.
Thank you.
To see photos and a video of Natalie Dell and her teammates, go to hereandnow.org. And we leave you with music Natalie says the U.S. women's rowing team likes to listen to while they train. It's called Greyhound by Swedish House Mafia. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Monica Brady-Myrov. Robin Young is back on Monday. Have a great weekend, and please join us again here and now.